SBS Radio.
The dealing and purchasing of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander artwork can sometimes be an exciting experience for us as consumers, but can also be a challenge for artists. The beautiful, bright colours on canvases can hide a dark side, so dark that the expression "enslaved to make art" is being used to describe the way some Indigenous artists have been exploited and ripped off for their own art and sometimes of their freedom of choice. So how do we know how transparent the transaction is when we are buying Indigenous art? What do you know about the artists and how much of the profits go directly to them? Do we really protect the rights of our Indigenous artists whilst at the same time being aware of what we are purchasing as consumers? I'm Kerry Lee Harding and this is the NITV podcast.
It was a story about some artists that were taken from their community, from the Northern Territory, and brought to Melbourne. They were enslaved, like, to make art.
Janina Harding is the Artistic Director of the Cairns International Art Fair, or CIAF as it's known. And many years ago, before the National Art Code was introduced, Janina and her team set up the very first Indigenous art policy in Australia, the Indigenous Art Code at the City of Melbourne.
Yeah, the City of Melbourne, I'd been working there for a few years and I set up an advisory panel. So they were an art advisory panel made up of, you know, artists from that worked in different mediums. So there was like musos, visual artists, actors, directors, that kind of thing, that made up the advisory panel to advise me in my role and policy to the City of Melbourne, basically, when it came to the arts and culture sector. And there was an article that appeared in the front of the Age newspaper. And this would have been, I think it was something like 2004 or 5 or something. It was a long time ago. It seems a long time ago. Well, it was a long time ago. Yeah, it hit the front page of the Age. And it was a story about some artists that were taken from their community from the Northern Territory and brought to Melbourne. And it was reading the article, it was like they were enslaved, like, to make art. So and they belonged to a particular, well, they were represented by a particular gallery in Bourke Street in Melbourne. And that kind of hit home for all of us sitting around the table discussing this whole issue that appeared in the paper and how could we as first peoples of this country support artists? And, you know, how do these galleries get away with something like this where people are just taken from their home, from another part of the country, and brought to Melbourne and left in a house, I think it was in Dandenong, to make art. And it was bitterly cold, I remember, that time of the year. And here are these people from the Northern Territory with, you know, they wouldn't have had coats like we're used to wearing in Melbourne. They probably wouldn't have had anything like that. You know, how do you keep warm? And apparently they were stuck there for a while in this house and left to their own devices. And one of the neighbours from that around that neighbourhood found them and said, "What's going on?" And she was, you know, very, she was actually, you know, feeling like she should do something about it. And I think she was the one that contacted the newspapers and the media about it because, you know, you had these people that had no food, they weren't warm, obviously. So I don't know what was going on there with this gallery, with this dealer or this gallery person that ran that gallery in Bourke Street. But it all came to light and we just thought, well, we need something in place. What can this thing be that we need? And, you know, we thrashed through, you know, meeting after meeting, and we decided to, I thought to myself, well, we need some kind of policy around it. Then we thought of this code of practice, and I contacted Terry Jenke about it, and she'd the arts lawyer in Sydney, and the Indigenous arts lawyer. And she said, "Let me come down there and I'll help you guys out." So she met with all of us people on the panel and talked to various artists in Melbourne and spoke to some galleries and retailers and that kind of thing. And she came up with this code of practice for galleries and retailers of Indigenous art for the City of Melbourne.
So, why did the City of Melbourne set up their very own art code for artists, consumers and local art galleries?
And so it was basically a code of practice, pretty similar to what you see in the Indigenous Art Code today. I remember Gabrielle from the Indigenous Art Code visiting me in Melbourne, and I was explaining to her about that. And, it was after that. She came to Cairns when I got the job here at the Cairns Indigenous Art Fair. She visited me in Cairns and wanted to know all about this code that I'd started, or that we started, for the City of Melbourne. And so I guess the City of Melbourne Art Code was the beginning of the Indigenous Art Code that we know today.
How do we as consumers ensure transparency in transactions when we are purchasing Indigenous art? Janina Harding explains.
People should buy from galleries. Don't buy from shops just because they've got Indigenous art, because they can just be as shonky as, you know, the tourist art you see in the, you know, the local mall or whatever. You know, you've got to have, when you're buying art, you've got to find out about the artist. Do they give you any insight into, you know, the bio of the artist, the details of the artist, where they're from? You know, have they signed off on it? Not particularly sign off on the, you know, put their signature on the art, but is there any documentation to say, you know, where the art actually comes from? I guess it's just about educating yourself and looking for things. The work has to be certified, you know, from the artist or the art centre. You kind of have to know where it comes from.
The Indigenous Art Code really came out of an inquiry recommendation, and that inquiry occurred back in 2007, and that specifically looked at issues around the Indigenous arts, visual art market. And one of the recommendations out of that inquiry was that the Indigenous Art Code be established. And the purpose of that code being to establish, you know, good practice and ethical trading between dealers and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander artists. And so really that's how the Indigenous Art Code was born. And commenced operation in 2010. And so the Indigenous Art Code, it's a voluntary code of conduct. So the way that it works is that those who are dealing with art, and also Indigenous artists themselves and Indigenous businesses dealing with art, can become members. So members sign up on a voluntary basis and through an application process with the code. And these members, once they do become members, have demonstrated that commitment to the principles of the Indigenous Art Code, which is all about ensuring that there's fair, ethical and transparent trading between artists and those that deal with their works.
You just heard there from Stephanie Parkin, Kwanda Mukka woman from Stradbroke Island and chair of the National Indigenous Art Code, which is not only set up for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander artists, but it is also in place for consumers. Why the consumers? So we know exactly what we are dealing with and that the transaction we are doing is transparent. The ethical purchasing of Indigenous art has been an issue of much concern for many years now. Even though the Indigenous Art Code is in place, there are still many of our artists who remain underrepresented, therefore are vulnerable when it comes to selling their artworks. Paul Johnston is an art gallery owner from Darwin and represents many remote Aboriginal art centres and artists.
The Senate inquiry, the first Senate inquiry, was in about 2007, and which, you know, the Art Code was actually a response to that inquiry. And it took a long time for the code to actually start to get traction, get meaning, and to be honest, to work out how it was going to approach a multifaceted and fractured industry. And you know, the last 3 years, I've seen the code strengthen in its vision, and that the main vision is to actually protect the artists regardless of where they're based, i.e. it might be artists that are working in Todmorland and Alice Springs. They go day by day to sell artwork in order to provide food on the table. Those people need to be protected, as do anybody else across Australia. And when I say protected, I'm talking about protected from dealers who want to exploit their artwork, i.e. if that person really needs to buy some food that night, it comes to 4 o'clock in the afternoon, they don't have anything, a dealer comes along and buys that work for a quarter of the price that it deserves, then that's exploitation, and that's what the code is really focusing on. And that that didn't really exist when I first started, not in the way it is now, first started back in 2007. I worked for numerous galleries that certainly, I wouldn't say were totally transparent, there's that word again, back in the day, which is why I left and which is why I started the gallery in the first place, because I felt there was a great need for galleries that could operate in a way that was for the artist, not for the gallery.
Naomi Hobson is a Cohen artist from Cape York, producing bright and bold, colourful pieces of work on canvas. Naomi signed up with the Indigenous Art Code, giving her confidence to continue her artwork, which is inspired by her own family's connection to country.
I signed up for the Indigenous to be part of the Indigenous Art Code because I'm always thinking about the future for as an artist and for my artwork. You've always got this such high interest in around Indigenous art now, and I just wanted to think about the security around it, protecting and the rights of Indigenous of our culture through in our art, but it's also about a fair trade, setting up, establishing. A transparent with in trading and Indigenous art, and it's recognising also authentic art as well.
Selling art and dealing with non-Indigenous art galleries can sometimes be a daunting experience for artists. But what are some of the issues and challenges faced by Indigenous artists when it comes to the sale of their art? Stephanie Parkin explains.
Entering into agreements, maybe not understanding all the terms of the agreements. In those cases, there's obviously potential for exploitation as well for artists in those transactions that they're having. So one of the things that we do provide all artists, really, we do encourage Indigenous artists to sign up as members. But if Indigenous artists are seeking information about the arrangements that they're entering into, so we assist artists to obtain transparent information about those arrangements, and we assist them to understand the arrangements that they're entering into. What we're looking to do also and be really mindful of is that, artists have agency and maintain autonomy over their decision making and who they choose to deal with in relation to their art practices. So we're there to assist them in that decision making process.
So, what should we as consumers be looking for when it comes to buying Indigenous art ethically? And what questions should we be asking artists and art dealers upon purchase?
The term ethically can sometimes be used without any great basis behind it. And sometimes I'm a bit concerned about some of the businesses I see that have either eco or ethical attached to their description. Transparent for me is probably a lot better, and when I say transparent, I mean that the transaction is transparent. So it's always the consumer always has the strength and the power of a transaction. So let's say, for example, somebody comes into my gallery, and if they ask me a question of how much the work's worth, how much is going to go back to the artist, how is the artist treated, I can tell them all those answers immediately, and it's very transparent. It's a very transparent transaction. Sometimes that transparency is muddied deliberately, and that's when I start to get concerned about how the artists are being treated, both with the return from their artwork, and also for me, it's a huge responsibility to make sure that I am the conduit for the story of that. That work that I'm selling. So I need to have some understanding. I'm not the artist, but I can help be the conduit for that artist. And so that's part of that transparency as well. Because if I have an invested interest in that artist and that artwork and make sure that that work is being sold and that story is being heard, then I need to know a lot about that. If somebody doesn't have that interest, then they're not going to be able to respond, and they're going to just deflect the question. So the power is in the consumer, and it's about transparency. That's the main thing. The consumer needs to ask those questions.
You just heard there from Paul Johnston. Now let's hear what Stephanie Parkin has to share when it comes to consumers purchasing Indigenous art.
Oh, look, I think it's just really an encouraging time for people to continue to ask questions when they are purchasing Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander artworks as well. So, you know, we all have a role to play in this and ensuring that artists are treated fairly. So the more that, you know, research can be done and more questions can be asked about by consumers, I think only is a good thing. Yeah, so there's some pretty sort of standard questions that can be asked. So, you know, asking questions about who is the artist, where is the artist from, even questions about the particular art piece that's been displayed or promoted for sale, and also questions around, you know, the arrangements that have been made with the artist. So asking what type of royalties or other fees flow back to the artist through the purchase of the work. So these are some of the questions that consumers can really ask when they are wishing to engage with those pieces.
Naomi Hobson, artist, says there should be clear processes between the artist and the purchaser or gallery owner, and encourages other artists to join the Indigenous Art Code.
I just would encourage artists and art galleries and art centres to really get behind Indigenous Art Code, because it is the, you know, our art, you know, it's what keeps us alive. I mean, it's my livelihood. I solely depend on my art, and you know, I need to have a proper process in place. I need to know what I'm signing up to, and the Indigenous Art Code, you know, it clears that. It sits you down. You know, it makes you understand how the process works. That there needs to be a fair trade. You need to have a proper system set up, you know, and that's what I would encourage other artists to really look at the Indigenous Arts Code and get signed up, you know, join the campaign. I mean, our art is important. It's who we are. It's our identity. It's our history, and it's so important. And we need to secure a future for it, and make sure that, you know, future artists that are coming through can tell their stories in a proper way, through a proper life. And I think the Indigenous Art Code supports that.
I'm Kerry Lee Harding, and this is the NITV Podcast. And you can also tune in to listen to more of our NITV podcasts, like Take It Black, Short Black, and Ballin' Out. Go to where you get your podcasts from on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Google Podcasts.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.